2017, three men joined together in a pact to see what they could collectively do to advance civilization, further the cause of world peace, and elevate mankind. These three men were internationally renowned musician and Linkin Park multi-instrumentalist Dave Phoenix Ferrell, multiple PGA Tour champion and world-class golfer Brendan Steele, and Mark. They named themselves the Members. Those who they chose to sit with and ponder the mysteries of the universe, they named the Guests. What you're about to listen to is one of those historic conversations. Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. Welcome to Member Guest.
What's up, guys? A new location for us today. We're in our LA home office of the Member Guest Podcast. With me today, as always, Mark and Brendan. Boys, what's happening?
I'm just so jacked on that intro music. I mean, that is just on point.
Who made that, by the way?
That's a great call.
That is amazing.
We might at some point get into that, I would imagine. Today's guest, and I do have a little prepared statement on this, and it's lengthy, so buckle up. Today's guest is a creative juggernaut. He's a singer, a rapper.
Wait, what was that beginning part? Say that first line again.
Today's guest is a dipshit.
That's the start. That's the beginning that we're really looking for.
Today's guest is a creative juggernaut. He's a singer, a rapper, a songwriter, multi-instrumentalist for Linkin Park. He's a film scorer, a record producer, a visual fine artist, and a graffiti artist, and a celebrity tattoo designer.
Nice.
You get the last one?
Celebrity tattoo designer.
That's
yours.
Me. That's me.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He has won Grammys, AMAs, Billboard Awards, MTV Moon Men, Snow Globes, Euro Globes, Echoes, Antler Trophies, Medallions, and Medals.
And Dave's heart.
We'll get to that. Additionally, he's received the Japanese American National Museum's Award of Excellence, the East-West Players Visionary Award, and an honorary doctorate of humane letters from Pasadena's Art Center College of Design. Most recently, he's received the Lifetime Achievement Award for Camaraderie. It's an award recognizing excellence in friendship and bestowed upon him by the Lord Phoenix Ferrell Foundation. You didn't know that one.
I didn't even know that. That just happened, didn't it? These are the things that got you suspended from Wikipedia, Dave. This is people don't even... We have so much to talk about.
Today, we warmly welcome Mr. Mike Shinoda.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mike.
Hi.
It's so great to have you here. Mark and I were talking just yesterday. The thing we were discussing was, I'm coming back to the band from the Snacks. That's a band that me and Mark were playing in.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the Snacks.
Yeah.
You don't need to preface that.
Thank you, Brendan. It's 2000. We've played music prior to that. But at this stage, I'm returning back into the fold of Linkin Park. I've had about a year absence. What, if any, would be a deal breaker as far as whether I could be coming back into the band?
Like if Dave demanded he always has to have no pants on when he plays. Like that's his stage thing.
I only play nude and I wear Crocs.
Deal breaker?
Deal breaker?
Oh, man. It wouldn't be that far from what we were dealing with while you were gone. I mean, like, so just to be clear, like, if anybody's, you know, tuning in doesn't know, Dave was there from the very beginning. And then at a certain point, he said, well, I made a commitment to go play with my other band. We were like, but we're about to get a record deal. Like we have big stuff going on. Like what's the Snacks doing? And it's like, we're playing like church parking lots.
Literally.
Yeah.
We were melting kids' faces.
At one point we were playing, the stage was the back of like a big rig truck complete with suspension. And so what we didn't realize when we started playing the stage was if we were to jump around or move, the whole truck bed would move because it had suspension, and then our drums started falling over. those are the type of stages me and Mark were playing.
A little known fact, I actually was the lead singer for your band for one show.
That is true.
When Dave was not the bass player.
Oh, wait, he wasn't there that day?
You weren't officially back in the roster.
Yeah, it was Drake Stadium at UCLA Stadium.
How many people
were
in that stadium?
There were six of us in the band. and then there was four of us in the snacks, and then there might have been two other people.
They were like, having a marathon, like, or like a 10K or something. Yeah. So they had like all these little celebratory things for people who had finished their run, and we were the entertainment. Like, yay, you're coming back from your run. Congratulations. And meanwhile, we're just playing our music, screaming at people. Basically, they're like, yeah, I finished my run. Why is that guy yelling? Yeah, it was a really good show.
Zero snacks.
Zero snacks. Every couple days, I was bugging Rob and Brad, like, did you reach out to Dave? Is Dave coming back yet? You didn't hear from him? You got to reach out again.
At this point, I'm like back living with my mom. I remember the phone call from Brad that was like, we need to know because we're kind of struggling and we need to figure out one way or the other which direction we're going to move. Mm. And P.S., like, come back.
You have to come back.
At that point, I could have been like, I'm ready. However, my new thing is that I play naked with Crocs on. Is that okay? And Brad would have been like, yeah, you're in. Sure. That's fine. Yeah. whatever you need to do.
I don't know what a deal breaker would have been. Even underwear and Crocs, you'd be all right.
Lindsay and I always talk about deal breakers. I think I may have accidentally started it years ago where I'd be like, if I was 3 feet tall, but still the same person, would you have married me? Like, you know, all the, like, whatever. Yeah. And then her current thing is like, if you drove around and you had like a bunch of stuffed animals in your back, like the
that
back
guy.
Of your car.
That guy. Okay.
Yeah. She's like, that probably would have been a deal breaker. I wouldn't have married you.
I remember the story where Lindsay likes to tell the Ozfest story. She comes out on the road with you and she's like, I don't think I can do this. And at the time, Dave's like, if this is what this is, I don't think I can do this either.
Oh, yeah.
That's back right to like that same time period, like 2001 or two, though.
Was Black Sabbath headlining?
Yeah, I think that was the first year that they were actually doing Sabbath on Ozfest.
And Marilyn Manson
was playing. Yep, and Slipknot and Crazy Town. And I only say that because
that's part of my story, though. Okay. That's part of my story. They had put Crazy Town and Papa Roach and Linkin Park on the bill, and it was the first time they had done like what was in quotes like rap metal or nu metal. And the metal magazines thought that was controversial, and so they started asking Sharon Osbourne about it in the interviews leading up to the opening of the tour. So the tour hadn't started yet. And they interview her, and she was basically like, yeah, I hate those bands. Like, we're only putting them on there for the girls. And we didn't even start the tour yet. Like, we hadn't even played one show on this tour, and now we were already screwed. Like, all the Marilyn Manson fans and Slipknot fans came to boo us. And they showed up from day one. Like, they all showed up to give us a hard time, and we played through it. And the worst part was that we played, like, right after Crazy Town, and those fans hated Crazy Town. Butterfly was their big single. I mean, it was just like those guys with their shirts off winking at girls.
So my wife went to that Ozfest, the most anti-Ozfest wife that you could ever imagine.
All right.
Hates all the music that I love and everything. She goes to that Ozfest only to see Crazy Town. And then leaves before Linkin Park plays
just
bails out. So that's she'll so absolutely
rich.
Love the story.
So the first time I met Anastasia.
Does she have any documentation of that? Like, can she send us a picture that we can post of her?
Oh, here's what I want to know. What did she look like? What was her hair like? What was she wearing?
To that show. That's what we need to find out.
I mean, she would not have fit in any way.
Really? She would have been really so she wasn't in dressing the part.
No, not at all.
That tour was insane. And we were miserable from the moment we left LA to go join up or wherever we were. We were playing great shows. We were doing our part. Our fans were avid. They were so pumped to be there. But like having a hard time getting any respect from any of the other bands. We had to work so hard to convince them.
We've talked about it a little bit on the podcast. But the funny thing to me about that is people want to look back at the Hybrid Theory years or even the Meteora years and think that it was this magical time that everything was critically acclaimed and well received. Right. There's almost this
gloss.
It
was all just straight up. Like we just went from nobody to like the biggest band.
And granted, not everybody loves Hybrid Theory and Meteora, but if you go on like a metal site now, they'd be like, fuck these guys. Like after Meteora, they suck. Well, like, P.S. on your own metal site, during Meteor and Hybrid Theory, we also sucked. Like,
now it's a legendary album and everything else right, sucks. Right. But back then it was the only album and it sucked.
It also still sucks. Like
we've always sucked.
We've always sucked.
Yeah, basically. I mean, sucked. I always liked what we were doing. But
me as well. I've always been partial to our music that we've been creating. But we've always been getting criticized. So yeah, it's not a new thing. We release One More Light, and it's not a new thing that
somebody's upset about something. Yeah. There was a time when I was like, man, I really like these types of artists, and they are all playing on these festivals, and we're playing on not those festivals. We're playing on the rock metal festivals, not because that's our ideal, what we want to be doing, but that's like where our music has been fitting in and whatever. And I was saying, like, I wish we could go play these other shows. I went to one of those shows and they had two nights, and one of them was like the more like little more rock leaning one, and the other one was the very alternative one. And I went to the alternative one and I watched those bands and I realized I like their music, but I'm pretty sure that if I hung out on a tour with these groups for like 2 months, I'd hate them all. Like, I just realized, oh, there's like literally no difference. Like, I can be on Ozfest for 2 months and at the end of it go like, that was a grind and we got beat up and whatever. And then I can also be on the other tour, which I had kind of idealized in my head, and realized there are people whose music I love and they're awesome. There are people whose music I love and they're jerks. Right. And there are people whose music I hate and they're actually great. And I end up being great friends with them.
We just celebrated another birthday, Mike, me and you both. Happy birthday.
Yes, yes. They always line up with the Grammys too. Every time I see the Grammys on the calendar, I'm like, oh yeah, my birthday is close. In golf, is there a Grammy equivalent?
Absolutely.
I was going to say no.
No, there definitely is. What's golf's biggest night?
Golf's biggest night? The Champions Dinner?
No. Well, yes, yes. You're on the right track. Champions Dinner where?
At the Masters?
Yes, the Masters.
Okay, so you know that I'm not like a big golf fan, so I'm very unfamiliar. It's always funny for me to talk to Dave's friends who are like serious about golf or pro golfers, and I am a tourist. I know what the Masters are. The Champions Dinner is like, do they show that on TV? Is that private?
Like, yeah, it's super private. So yeah, you have to have won the Masters or be the chairman of Augusta National in order to go. The defending champion picks the meal. So he has total control over what everybody eats and drinks and whatever for the night. And it's probably the coolest thing you could be a part of. Now, that being said, we could come up with our own golf awards to give at the end of the season. And basically, they would be like the Grammys.
Right.
Which sounds pretty awesome.
Maybe we edit this out, but this is like a circle of trust. The Grammys is an awesome thing in music in the sense that it elevates the artists and it's a great thing for me as a fan to get to watch a ton of different musicians, you know, at the top of their game in different genres, all play in one spot. Mm. Having said that, being a part of the Grammys, you realize pretty quickly that the Grammys is about selling advertising.
It's a business.
It's a business. Yeah. And so it's not going to make you feel like a sense of warm fuzzies for having accomplished something, which makes sense. Because if you wanted to do that, if you really wanted to honor musicians, you wouldn't televise it. Like, you wouldn't make it into this big spectacle. You'd just say, like, we want to honor you for what you've achieved as far as creativity goes in this past year.
And there, there are events that do that, like the BMI awards and ASCAP, and even to some extent, like the Billboards and those, while those are still like a show that is like designed to make money, the winners are based on some kind of like very precise metric. Like, you have sold this many records, or the fans voted and they voted for you. You can't muck around with those winners, those numbers, right? But the Grammys aren't that. The Grammys are just politicking and backdoor voting. If we ever really wanted to win more Grammys, we basically need to switch managers and just join CAA or William Morris, because they're the two biggest management agencies with hundreds of employees. Those people are all voting members. They all vote for you. So automatically you get all hundreds of votes that you wouldn't have otherwise gotten, and you win. So anyway, that's the politics of it. But that's not defining. Like, it is, I do believe that their intention is to have a big celebration of music.
Yeah.
And
make money to fund all of their great programs. They do have a bunch of great programs.
For sure.
There was a controversy recently about the president of the Grammys because they had some flack for not representing more women. Obviously, tons of women in the music industry. And then you watch the show and they're basically, it's all men. It's like honoring all men and the nominees and then like a woman. And then the performers are totally all men. And they, it was like to the extent that they have the Kesha performance and it's like one performance with multiple women jammed into 3 minutes. And then, okay, get them off the stage and now more men. So, you know, they ask Neil about that. He's tired. He's done 100 interviews and he makes a comment about like the women just need, you know, hopefully they step up and we see more women next year. And he kind of put it back on them, which was a mistake. And everybody freaked out and they called for his resignation. They got all mad at him, whatever. I'm actually getting somewhere with this. It's not just about the Grammy and the thing, but he actually runs the whole organization. It's not just the Grammys. He runs all these different things. He's an advocate for like artists' rights with the U.S. government. So he's actually doing all these wonderful things that we kind of don't know and it's, I kind of forget about. Does it feel like when something happens on the internet, like the internet kind of will glom on to like one little moment or like one little thing somebody says and turn this, you know, molehill into a mountain and freak out. And all of a sudden everybody's really upset. It's like front page news. Like, oh my God, this is like a big deal.
Yeah, but for sure. It's that culture of outrage.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a bigger deal, but it doesn't last as long. You know what I mean?
Well, there's always something new.
Something goes over top
but,
of it.
Yeah. Right. Is it a bigger deal or is it just that if you want to tune in to the people who are yelling about something, and I mean yelling, obviously, in an online sense, then just you have access.
All caps typing.
Yeah, all caps typing. And to bring it back to one of our mutual friends, Jason Sobel, who's a golf writer, I told him years ago, whenever he writes a Tiger Woods article, I love to look at the comment section because people get crazy. Yeah. And this is a golf writer writing about arguably the greatest golfer of all time. And then you look at the comment section. It makes me feel so much better about any comment section that, you know, we're ever involved with as Linkin Park. But people are so angry in that. And then I realize, like, is it that they're that upset? Or is this just a place to vent for those people who are like, Tiger Woods is in every article you ever write. Like, how about some of the new guys who are out on tour? Like, why don't, oh, another Tiger Woods article? Like, screw you. Like, blah, blah. Then some of them are like, Tiger's a piece of shit. And then some of them are like, Tiger's the best thing that's ever happened to golf. Like, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's,
yeah.
Even if you don't know golf, if you know the internet, you know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the Grammys. Like, Neil's a piece of shit. Like, blah, 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 blah. Like, no, if you know anything, then Neil saves music. And then, like, you know, it's like everybody's, and it's not even everybody, but it's that angry 10% that just, like, wants to share in the comment section.
Do you think it's 10%?
Maybe 1%.
You think it's
probably 1%.
You think it's smaller, yeah.
I can tell you this. I am 100% certain about this, that it's 0% of my friends.
That is a deal breaker, right?
Yes.
If you found out that a friend of yours who's like a medium level friend, right? not high level.
I've got a great story.
So like you're like you see them at dropping off the kids at school. You've gone to dinner before, like you said, you've been at like little hangs and parties at somebody else's house, and they're there, and you talk and you hang out, and they're nice and it's great, and then you find out that like. You go on somebody else, like some relative's Facebook, and you see that they're just there. Blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you about that. Like, here's why you're stupid, right? That's like, don't talk to them anymore. Yeah.
So I won't even go down the path of who it is or how I know them, but a loose acquaintance that told me, yeah, I go on and I comment on these blogs and blah, 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 and my name is the keyboard terrorist. And I just light people up and this. And as he's saying this, I'm like, yeah, this doesn't work for me. Like, not that it was a friend of mine or ever even was going to be. It was just like a, don't like, this doesn't work.
Even if it was like a high level friend, wouldn't you kind of be like, oh man, I can't believe they did that. Like that is, it's making me rethink all of the decisions that I've made in this friendship.
For sure.
Yeah.
One of my coaches, Chris Mason, has this pretty good Instagram following, and he posts swings all the time. So the other day, he's like, can I take a picture of your grip? Because I have a very strange grip. Got this full, like, homemade swing, not PGA Tour swing, whatever. And he's like, can I post, like, why this works and, like, how this makes sense? And, like, I posted one that was the opposite a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it'd be interesting. And I was like, yeah, post away. This will be an awesome way for people to tell me why I suck so much. It's just perfect. So, like, it doesn't matter anything from swing mechanics to, I mean, if forget it if you make, like, a triple bogey on a hole or something. It's just, like, people lighting you up on Twitter. They're all, and then now with, like, DraftKings and all that stuff, you know, it's like, I picked you this week. And you sucked. My $2 bet is now toast because of you. And normally it's like, it's way worse. It's like, fuck you, you piece of shit. You know, I'm just like, whoa, guys. Like, a lot of the time it's like play by play too. So it'll be like,
oh my God.
You'll see it where it's like at the start of the round, I got off to a bad start. So the guy's really mad. And then I finished up and he's like, go get him tomorrow. Oh my God. Keep me in this thing. And you're just like, you guys do realize that I am trying, right? And if you put me on your team, like, I'm doing everything I can for you because it's also everything I can for me and my family.
You've got a lot more on the line than they do. Right.
I'm sorry about your $2, but I just lost a lot more than that.
Yeah, right. I'm not sure if I have a job next year. Thanks.
But obviously, the better you do, the more criticism you get.
Yeah. So when I first got on tour and stuff, nobody ever talked to me or talked about me. Nobody cared. And then now, like, the better I play, the more is expected. You know, when you finish 29th at Torrey Pines, people are like, you suck. That's terrible. I thought you liked playing in California. You're from California. You should be better than that.
You know what's so funny, though? Like, and I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on, like, how the internet works. I feel like I got a good sense of it. The funniest part about that whole thing, which, I mean, I get great joy out of it whether or not I exercise this power. But if you go on and you respond, hey, thanks for the tip, they're scared shitless. They're just like, I mean, like, the moment that somebody acknowledges, hey, you didn't just speak into the void. You spoke to a human being and I heard you. And they go, oh, man, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm so sorry. You're so great. I had a situation just this past week where, God, what did the kids say? Oh, we were having this whole thing. So I released some new music. I put up the new music and then I had announced two shows in Japan, but they're part of the same festival. So all the fans went, wait a minute, you're going to play some shows? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go play some shows. And they were like, well, you need to come here. I went out of my way to kind of explain the dynamic of, like, you know, it's one thing for a Linkin Park show to get set up where the promoters can have a really good sense of, like, what the draw is and where we should play and how big the venue should be and whatever. Me on my own, like, it's guesswork. Like, they have no idea. So I explained that to them. I started to see that they were really active, like, making up their own hashtags and all getting, like, motivated to kind of prove that I should come to their city. Prove it to the promoters and the agents and whoever. We start sending them to this website called We Demand because it'll aggregate the numbers and assign it to the city that they're from. Okay. So, like, oh, now all of a sudden, surprise, surprise, like, Melbourne is number one. Like, we haven't been to Melbourne in forever because I didn't know we had that big a fan base there anymore. And they're currently number one. So that was, like, a big deal. Well, in the midst of all that positivity and all that great effort being put on by thousands of fans, like, going to bat for me, which felt so good. And, like, there are those people who want to go on and just rain on the parade. This person was on there, and he basically, his thing was, so this is, like, all about the money then? It's, like, not about... I was just like, I don't even know where you're coming from. If you're just trying to make me feel bad, you're not even good at that. Like, you're not even doing a good job. And I could see that other people were starting to, like, kind of, like, respond to him and whatever. Again, like, I just had this feeling of, like, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to let him know why that's ridiculous. And so I responded to it. My response was basically, well, this is how promoters gauge, you know, the shows. And so they're basing it on demand. And if they think they're going to sell a show for 5,000 people and it's only 1,000, then we all lose. I lose, they lose, and you lose as a fan because it ruins my ability to go tour some more. That's number one. Number two, there are costs associated with touring. So, you know, if I'm going to make $100 from the show, but my production costs are $200, then I can't play. And number three, don't sass me. That was my number three. And he deleted the tweet immediately. Like,
I feel like sometimes people want to treat musicians or being a musician as if it's like church.
Okay.
It's not a nonprofit in the first place.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, I'm not going on tour for you. Like, this is my job. Like, what I do.
We talked about, like, who's the most artistic artist you can think of, whether that's Bjork or Tom York or it's Arcade Fire or it's, who is the other one? Die Antwoord. Like, it's a craziness art project, right? In all of those cases, they want to make the money they deserve from the shows that they're playing. Otherwise, they just go do it for free. And none of them are doing it for free. They're all selling merchandise and doing the thing. Like, it's because it's a living, and it allows them to feed their families and have a nice life in that term, but also to make better art around the corner.
Sure.
Like, it funds, puts money into the business, and then you make cooler stuff when you've got that money in the bank.
Years ago, I don't think it was your idea originally, but you might have been the first person I heard it from, where it was like this notion of, like, you vote with your wallet.
Yeah.
Like, and when it comes to creativity, when it comes to art, when it comes to music, mm-hmm. encapsulated in that, if you like something and you want more of it to be produced from a public standpoint, you need to support that in some way, mm-hmm. or else logically, like, that artist, whoever it is, whatever they're doing, whether it's music, art, fine art, whatever, they're not going to be in place to be able to continue doing it. Mm-hmm. And so you vote, like, with your checkbook, or you vote with your wallet. We have the best job in the world. Maybe second best might be professional golfer. But I would say that professional musician, whatever that means, is probably the best job in the world.
That's definitely number one above golf.
Yeah. Golf's a tough job. Everybody has this idea that, like, a rock star would be the best job. And in a lot of cases, like, yeah, it is. If you can get the job, you should do it, because it's a great job.
That line from Ferris Bueller. If you do have the means.
If you do have the means. I highly suggest it.
It is so choice.
So choice. Which is very, very true.
Yeah.
Having said that, it's going to cost us money to go do a show in Melbourne, and P.S., we have to be away from our wives and kids and everything else for weeks and weeks and months at a time. No, we're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not possible at that point.
That's because you're an old man.
For sure.
If you were 17,
I just had another birthday.
If you were a 17-year-old who had never been outside the country, you'd be like, I'll go do that show for free, because that's a free vacation.
Well, if you're a 17-year-old, you wouldn't understand that show for free, quote unquote, is actually going to cost you money. And then that 17-year-old wouldn't be able to afford the Qantas airfare to fly to Melbourne in the first place, let alone
stuck there.
They wouldn't even be able to get there. They'd drive to LAX and then be like, oh, wait, I've got to buy my own plane ticket to go play this free show? Like, oh, the end of the show. Like, it's not even going to happen.
That's great.
So, birthday celebrations, anything?
Oh, I didn't do much for my birthdays here. Just kind of hung out with the family. I ate way too much good food and posted way too much of it on my social media, which when other people do it, I'm just like, why are you always posting pictures of food? And then I was that guy. So sorry. But the big gift this year was I got a PlayStation VR, and I literally put that thing on. And I think 4 hours later, I took it off, and my wife was like, you were in that thing for so long. Like, welcome back. It was a time warp. At least the first moment of checking it out is, like, such a cool experience. I remember going to Facebook and getting an Oculus demo. And then the morning that I woke up to go down there, I realized I had pink eye again.
How many times have you had pink eye in your adult life?
100,000 times.
Welcome to the world.
I almost had pink eye again this week. In fact, I kid you not. Like, one of my kids had goo coming out of her eye with the red and whatever. Oh, and by the way, this is crazy. Total weird side note. The pediatrician said, is it red? I said, yeah. Is there goo coming out of it? I said, a little. Is there a fever? No. Is there cold symptoms? No. And they said, okay, what the doctor's currently prescribing is a caffeinated tea bag, like, wet it and put it on the eye 4 times today, 4 minutes at a time, and let us know if it got any better. And I'm like, okay, it sounds like you're just, like, trying to, like, buy yourself some time because you can't get the doctor on the phone, but whatever. And I kid you not, like, she did it, and by the end of the day, it went away.
Mike, I've spent thousands of hours of my life observing you. That sounds weird, but that's been my job.
That's very, I mean, it's very true.
Thousands.
It's extremely creepy.
You rub your eyes all the time. Maybe that's why you're getting pink eye.
Dude.
You also pick your butt.
Pick my butt and rub my eyes.
I just do that. You also pick my butt.
I need to get on the, I need to not rub my eyes and I need to get on the Purell.
The birthday pink eye. I feel like, Mike, me and you kind of run in the same vein as far as our birthdays go. Like they're going to usually be pretty, they're going to be fun, but understated. Yeah. Like mine, a couple buddies and we went and played like foot golf this year for my birthday. And it was just like, you know.
A couple buddies?
That was a big group.
Well, I mean
the group was, you took
20 of us. Was it 20?
That was a big group that you took you put the picture on Instagram.
The point being that.
That's a small party for Dave Farrell.
I mean, it was like 15 guys and 15 girls.
That's, that was that's his buddies. Super low key this super year. We're low just key. Not really inviting.
We're super chill.
Ruining his story.
Well, right he now. Didn't invite any medium friends.
Especially any medium friends with comments.
Nobody got pink eye. Like it was pretty.
Okay, what's the point though?
The point being,
we totally derailed.
Have it. I told you guys this last year's Lindsay's Vegas birthday party? I mean, the birthday celebration
because she birthdays for a month.
Yeah, it's not a birthday, it's a birth month. It's a lot of stress and pressure on me. So, May of last year, it's Lindsay's birthday month. Leading up to it, Lindsay's like, I want to go to a rave. Well, the closest thing we can do to a rave is potentially Marshmello spinning and performing at whatever club it was he was at in Vegas. And some of our mutual friends from Of Mice and Men, Phil, he knows Marshmello, who's playing in Vegas. So I'm like, all right, let's see if we can make this happen. We show up there. They've arranged for us to have like a special VIP table right by where Marshmello is like mixing. At this point, it's like 11 o'clock at night, maybe midnight. I don't even remember, but I'm done. I'm tired. I'm not a late night guy in the first place, admittedly. Lindsay and her girlfriend go dance and another friend sees a buddy, so he's gone. And I'm the only one sitting at this couch. It's like a VIP couch in this area, and it's just me. And the club's it's not like completely packed yet. Fast forward an hour or so, I'm still kind of by myself, and there's a ton of people now behind me that are separated by this little tiny silly barrier, and they're so excited, and Marshmello started, and I'm super uncomfortable because there's no one else in my little zone. So I'm like, this is kind of weird. I'm starting to feel a little bit of anxiety. I don't really know what to do. P.S. I'm like 40. Everybody around me is 25 tops. What the fuck am I doing here?
You're guarding like $5,000 worth of alcohol.
$5,000, aka like $150.
Yeah, street value. Street value, $89.
Club value versus street value. We had had a couple drinks off the two bottles we had had, and I've noticed that the vodka, which is like a massive thing, is completely gone. So I'm looking, and a guy from the group who's next to us now, and it's now packed in the VIP section where we're sitting, goes to grab our handle of whiskey.
Wait,
that's left.
How old is this guy? What's he
to
look
describe
like?
Describe him. Yeah, he looks like do you know Jersey Shore?
Okay. I'm familiar with the program.
He's 25 tops. He's like club mode. He's good looking.
Tan.
He's jacked and tan. His clothes are like
GTL.
Dry cleaned. DTL? DTF? He's DTF.
GTL. Gym tan laundry.
Gym tan laundry. He's probably more or less 50 pounds heavier than I am. And probably like 6'2". He grabs the whiskey. I see it. And I go over there and I smack his hand. I smack his hand away as if I'm dealing with a 5-year-old.
Oh, God.
And the words, and I'm in full on dad mode. The words come out of my mouth. That is not your alcohol. That's what I say. I smack his hand and I say, that is not your alcohol. And he looks at me and he's like, oh, okay, haha, like whatever. I looked him in the eye and I said, no. It short-circuited his brain as to what was happening. And he just looked at me and he's like, I'm sorry. Like, oh,
nice.
And like just slowly, like this slow motion movement, like started like handing me the jug back. So like, okay, I put it down, and then I realized after the fact,
of what I was doing and how much of a maniac I was. I don't know whether I should be proud of myself or kind of embarrassed. I'm like, I don't know how that went. Maybe 15 minutes later, we're all kind of like, all right, the show's kind of wrapping up. I think we're kind of done. And I went up to the guy and I was like, hey, man, we're taking off. Like, you can have the rest of the bottle of whiskey. And in his face, it was like he had just won the lottery.
So good.
You went from, I'm going to give you a timeout to, you get a cookie. That happens every night at my house. Right around 7 o'clock.
He didn't punch you in the face, so he gets the rest of the alcohol when you're done with it.
He reacted accordingly.
Yeah, like, he did the responsible thing.
I feel like there's a combination for him, to his credit, of like embarrassment going on with like, I'm kind of being scolded. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it was also like, who is this graybeard that's like scolding me at the Marshmallow Show? And like, of all the gifts I've given, that was the one that was best received.
That was the greatest gift.
There was more joy.
Oh, Mark, if this was a different show, that'd be the moment to add the like the canned applause and laughter, like the laugh track. Because we did that. Do you remember the Fiori show?
Yes.
The Fiori show.
One of my favorite things
ever. We had this time when we were on the road where I'm just like inherently like I need to be making stuff. Like if I can't make a song, I'll just make other crap. At one point, I was trying to learn how to edit stuff on my computer, import little videos and put them together. And I decided to make a show out of footage of Mark. So like, I just started like shooting. Isn't that right? What was it about?
Well, I was making a show about you guys, so you were making a show about me making a show about you guys.
The show is about you putting up with me and Joe sabotaging you.
Pretty much. The Mark Fiori show.
But the real charm.
It was heavy on laugh track.
The charm was he could do just about anything. Like, he'd be filming something, and one of us would sabotage it by, like, back then, like, it was, if you put a middle finger up in the screen, then that footage was no good anymore. He'd have to edit around it. So constantly we'd be in the middle of like an interview or doing whatever, and somebody would just stick a finger up in or put something inappropriate on the screen in front of his camera. He'd be like, damn it. And Mark is pissed. And then the laugh track would happen. It was so great.
Knowing Mark as well as I do, he probably appreciates it now. And at the moment, it was just like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this? I've got to make it perfect. And now it's not perfect. This is ridiculous. That's part of Mark's charm, though, is like whenever Mark makes me a drink, like a cocktail.
Oh God, yeah.
It's like a 30-minute process. And I appreciate that about him, because it will be the best cocktail that you've ever had. Because he's like, okay, the lime has to go like this. And then
did you notice my coffee? I said, you remember did you hear me when I left here? And I was like, just a coffee. He's like, do you want a cappuccino? Or I was like, just a coffee. He made me a latte, like a perfect latte with the foam and then everything.
And he wasn't letting you get away with just a coffee.
No, it's not.
That's not his style. Mm-mm.
We have 10 minutes or so.
See, and even now he's producing the show. People don't know that Member Guest is actually Mark's show.
He's doing all the work.
It goes under the radar.
Now they know. Now they know.
Not when I edit this whole section.
Not when he works the section out. You had mentioned, Mike, the need to create. Mm. Like that need to always be creating content.
ABC?
What's ABC?
I just made that up.
Always be creating. Always A, be creating. Always A, B, B, C, creating.
That's always like, be creating.
Yeah. Can we edit in cheerleaders doing that?
Okay. Yeah. Do you feel like you've always been that way? Is that something that's natural for you? Or do you feel at some point it might have been a learned process? And to give a little bit of color to those who might not know, you are creatively different than most people I've come in contact with. I've come in contact with a lot of creatives. My ideas get less good until I recharge. Like I have a couple ideas, I have a couple thoughts, and then I need to regroup. Whereas yours always seem to be a little more exponential in how you work. Like one idea leads to two, and then those two ideas branch into four more ideas, and then you stop those four ideas for music, and then you go create when it comes to art, and then that's the same branch happens, and then you come back to your music, and then those four lead to eight.
It's like an echo chamber or something. Like it's like it feeds on itself, you know? There have been times when I wished I was more untethered in a sense of like, being freely creative and not having to fit it in a box, that I could be wildly creative and weirder and just let things flow. But the way it works for me is it's like a left brain, right brain thing. So like, you know, your right brain is said to be the more creative side. Your left brain is the more organized. And for some people, they're very right brainy. They just make and make and make. And then it, like, whatever it fits into, then that fits into. And for me, it's always, I think the other side of my, the logical end is always like engaging and keeping things organized in a way. So as I'm making something, I'll be thinking of the next step. Like, what's the next thing I can do with it, or how to make it better, or how does it connect to something else that I'm already making? And part of that is actually having, getting older and having like responsibilities and kids and stuff like that. You know, you're sharing your time, you're splitting your time up amongst like your work stuff and your, in my case, like writing music or making art or whatever. And then I want to have enough time at the end of the day to go like spend time with the kids, tuck the kids in, or do the stuff at the schools, or go on one of their field trips. They always have parent chaperones. Like, I like to do that, right? So I got to be efficient. My challenge is usually to try and keep it on track and like organized enough that it makes whatever the one thing I'm doing under the umbrella of like, so right now I'm doing like a solo project, and I want everything, if I'm working on music or anything like art related, I want it to lift that up and at the same time like do something for the band and do something for my friends and not only in the band but in our support team, the people in our office and our touring crew that's been with us and stuff. Like, in the situation that we're in, I think that those things, there's a lot of uncertainty and people are looking to say like, well, what comes next, like what happens tomorrow, and anything that we can, any of us can do to throw some support beams underneath it helps. So like for me to just emote in a song and put it out there and say, hey, this is like how I feel, and to put visuals to that that supports that, that doesn't just help me out, it actually does other things too. And I work those things kind of out in real time as I'm like making them. Yeah, it's like part of the art of it and the lifestyle / like culture of it, I think. That's weird. That was a very weird answer.
Talk about a little where post-traumatic fits into that, and because that's been the latest.
So I started writing songs a little over 6 months ago now. I was basically just, in a sense, just chronicling what I was feeling on the day. Like, we talked about this a lot. After Chester passed away, there were certain things we were scared to do. We had to get together with all the guys a week or two after, and David said, like, have you guys like listened to any of our music? And everyone was like, no. And he's like, I did. And that blew my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, like, how did you even do that? And he said, it wasn't as bad as you'd think. Like, it's super scary to do, but then I did it. And now I know that I can do it. And I've talked to other people too, who, you know, they've lost someone and they are scared to, here's a really specific example. They're scared to work out because they used to work out together all the time. And every time they go into the gym now, they're like, that's the first thing they think of. They think of it before they're even putting on any workout clothes. So then they don't put on the workout clothes and they don't go work out. And that's a thing that is, I mean, that's, everybody has that, right? So for me, it was like, I love writing music and I love painting. And if I don't just jump in and do them right away, then I'm going to probably have this buildup of like anxiety that'll be pretty tough to deal with. So I'd rather just like face it and go for it. And that's what I did. And I just started writing stuff. It ended up being a whole bunch of songs. I put out three of them and didn't do any interviews. This is, for the record, this is the first interview that I've done. So
not an interview.
We don't call this an interview.
I'm just saying. So... Then I've, yes. I've yet to do an interview.
Yes,
then.
Thank you.
I've yet to do an interview. Then there's been no like promotion or marketing or any of that stuff. It's just put the stuff out and let everything be me and you, me and whoever's listening. And it'll change over time. Like, I want to get back to the place where things are resemble a little bit of like what we're used to or what I'm used to. But at this point, I'm happy to like get there gradually.
Post-traumatic. Those songs, like, they express so well what not only you're feeling, but also I'm feeling. And cool. I know that I immediately, I know I've told you this, and yeah. But I immediately like gravitated towards that. For me, it's automatically so special because it sits in a realm in my soul and in who I am and in my life. It sits in such a special spot to express something that I can't express necessarily myself. And I feel like a lot of fans and a lot of other people who aren't even necessarily fans but might have experienced those similar type of feelings or that type of loss, they can relate to that in a way. And for me, that's the purest form of creative expression. This is really special and important and meaningful to anyone who has felt this type of loss. And for anybody who hasn't, I'm happy that they can't relate to it. Yeah. Right? Like, I'm like, and that would almost be like my feeling or message towards what you've done or created there is like, if you know what this is, then you know what it is. And if you don't, then
I hope you never do.
Then thank goodness. Like, because, because I hope you never fully understand what's going on there.
Yeah. I went over to the label, to Warner Brothers, a couple times now to talk about it and to make some plans about what to do next. There are those of us who were near the epicenter, right, who get hit the hardest. And then it's a gradient. There's a gradation out to the effect of it. And they sit, the folks that like the label and stuff like that, they sit in the middle somewhere where, like, I saw Peter, I saw Devin, I saw a lot of folks that have been with us for over 10 years, some of them like 15 years, and some of them since the very beginning. And the questions, what I so funny is like the questions that they have are the same questions everybody has. And my part of the experience of doing, of being out here for us and like talking about it and making songs about it and doing whatever is it's almost like art in action, like art come to life, right? Like there's a weird blur now between the art you create and just life. And it's exacerbated by the connectivity of social media and you know, just being able to turn on a live camera. Like I could be having the worst possible day. Like I wake up and I'm just like devastated. And I can turn on Instagram Live and just talk to people about it. Parents our age and older than us oftentimes will say, oh, well, you know, social media is so bad because their kids aren't like talking to each other. They're disconnected and there's all these negatives, right? But truth be told, like the one of the positives that's a huge one that we can't forget is that ability to like connect people on that level so easily and so with such a wide net is very powerful. And I'm in the middle of, I'm experiencing it like every time I go online. If I feel good and I post, I'm having a good day, the kinds of responses that I get back range from like, cool, man, me too, to like, one day I did that and a bunch of people said, like, I was having a really bad day. And this actually, and for similar reasons to why, you know, what we've been talking about, just knowing you're doing okay makes me feel better. I think that's powerful. I feel like I read that. I'm on the receiving end of that sometimes too. I don't have, there's no like moral to the story. There's no like end point to it because it's all ongoing and it's just.
You know, Chester was a wonderful friend of ours and a huge part of our life for the last 20-ish years. And you said something to me in dealing with that loss that really stuck with me, where you said, we have an opportunity to go through this and figure out how to do it positively. And also to kind of lead other people through that process who are also hurting. That to me was kind of a rallying cry. You know, it was kind of a real opportunity to, I don't know, to like, to relate in a different way, to see something that's really hard and come out on the other end, you know, and we have to figure out how to move forward, you know, and we have to figure out what our lives look like, both as a family first, you know, our own individual units, and then as a family second, like as a band, and we have to figure out what does tomorrow look like,
right?
You know,
I guess I'm coming from a point of view of like I've heard from enough people who don't have that kind of that's not their paradigm, where their option exists to give up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like what you just said rings through with like, yeah, obviously I wouldn't like quit. I mean, or whatever, like what about my family or what about whatever?
Right.
Like, and there are some people are not in that situation. And a tough thing to be thrust into this position or whatever it is, this isn't the club I ever aspired to become a member of, right?
Sure.
Some people think of being a musician or being a rock star as being like, you know, throwing the rules out the window and being like, saying no to authority and, you know, and even in some cases when we were like younger, like live fast, die young, you know, like just the idea of getting old, like they don't want to get old.
Right.
You know, and that's never been me. Or they want to be famous and rich and have a hot wife and whatever. And none of those things that I just mentioned have ever been my thing.
They don't want to be slapping hands at the Marshmallow Show.
I love our band and our guys. And I love the folks that are part of our circle of friends and that we've worked with. That's not accidental, right?
Sure.
Like our priorities are this other thing. It's more, to me, more grounded, more about like things that I want to be about. I don't know. We were talking about what to do next and why. I do spend time like trying to figure out that path, and it's a work in progress. I know people would love to have like a definitive statement from any of us saying like, sure, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
And it would be easy to do. Like I could totally lie right now and say, this is what's going to happen in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. You know, obviously this is like one of the most complex things you can imagine. Like I'm not trying to like make any false promises on this.
On a lighter note, I noticed that with Post-Traumatic, with the first song, your guest star in the video is a bass. Are you aware of that? I like to think that that's a nod.
Okay, Dave, I swear this is not, I'm not just saying this to like placate or whatever. I didn't intend when I was shooting it to do that, but I did think it was hilarious that you found a way to do basically photobomb my first visual. You found a way to photobomb it.
Mark's joke in teasing me is that in any Linkin Park video, there's two shots of Dave. One is somewhat of me in a quick shot. The other is like a shot of the bass.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of in your video.
The only way that would be...
there's just one less shot of you in this video than normal.
Mark, the only thing that would make it more perfect would be if the bass was able to blink through the shot. Like not have its eyes open. Because that's his superpower.
Is to have his eyes closed.
Have his eyes closed in every photo we take.
That's going deep.
I'm just saying. The fans don't know that.
They don't know that.
They just see the photo in the magazine.
Yeah.
They don't know that for that photo, there were 35 photos of you with your eyes closed.
This is going really deep, but we actually had a band poster where my eyes were shut in the photo that was taken, and then they superimposed open eyes onto my closed eyes.
That's a true story.
And then it's blown up to like a wall-sized poster.
True story.
Yeah, true story.
Meteora? That wasn't a Hybrid Theory kind of move. That wasn't the new band. New band can't say, hey, Photoshop the eyes.
Yeah.
But like Meteora band can say, Photoshop the eyes.
Crazy uncomfortable googly eyes onto the closed eyes guy and then make it a poster. So it's like huge. It's not like printed really small on like a magazine or promo shot. It's like a huge wall size poster of me with Photoshop eyes on it.
I thought it came out good. I couldn't tell it was Photoshopped.
Your eyes look really pretty in that poster.
Handsome eyes.
Better than usual.
Mike, I don't know if you know this. You came as a guest.
Mm-hmm.
Today you're going to leave as a member.
Yes.
You are always invited back.
Am I your member?
You're kind of my member. You know that. You always have been.
You're such a member.
You're kind of my member. You're kind of my penis. There, I said it.
See, that's funny because member can be taken to mean penis.
Right.
That's why that's funny.
I don't know what guest can mean, but you came as a guest, you exit as a member. It's customary here for us to ask if you have any final words.
My final words. This was fun, and when you first said you were going to do a podcast and you didn't invite me to first season, I knew that
we had to really bring it because it was going to be, you know, we have to take it up a level when I finally show up. And I think we did that.
We brought the A game. And then lastly, I know where we can follow you, but for anybody listening, where can they follow you on socials?
I'm usually Mike Shinoda on everything. You know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Snapchat is Mike Shinoda Live. And of course, if you want to check out the new music, you want to check out the videos. It's three songs, three videos. Go to MikeShinoda.com. You can check all that stuff out.
Didn't you just recently put yourself up on like a Russian?
That was just today. Yes.
Yeah.
VK. I'm on VK now. I'm on, I don't think I'm online yet for Japan, but I'll be, that's coming. Weird, right? I'm going to have to like build those from zero.
Remember guest has Russian fans, Japanese fans.
Oh yeah, for sure.
International.
Global.
And by the way, this is if somebody's listened this far, then they're probably willing to jump from here to go vote for a show in their area.
For sure.
WeDemand.com is where you can sign up and say, I want Mike to come play a show here. And that is actually like everybody's taking, at least on our team, is taking that very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're trying to find ways to get out to, it's like Moscow. Yeah. There's some city in Kazakhstan that I had to look it up. I didn't even know where that was, but it's working. Like people are actually saying like, we want to come to these places, and our agents are like, okay, like how do we get Mike over to Kazakhstan? I guess.
So just a super simple tour, like Melbourne to Moscow to Kazakhstan and then home.
And then
just
home.
Three shows.
Yeah.
Three shows.
I think I have
cost
to hit,
efficient.
I think and I have Nicolita. To hit Sao Paulo on the way home too.
Of course. Well, that's right on the way to
it's
LA.
It's on the way. I mean, it's basically, while you're in the area.
Who is your bass player on this tour? And maybe more importantly, who's your videographer?
We'll talk about that when the recording stops. After Mark presses space bar,
stop. Boys, may your drives fly straight. May your guitars stay tuned now and forever. Adios. Thanks, Mike.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike.